Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Call it the starving board, right? So you're either satisfied, hungry, or starving. And we rank our guys from 1 to 120 as who's the most starving guy and who's the guy that's the most satisfied, you know? And so what we try to do, and I think it's worked fairly well, is to be completely transparent. Like, this is where you're at. And put that up there for their peers to see.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into Power Athlete Radio. There are two things that Coach Ron McKeefry does anytime he's working with a new team. These two things transcend traditional working relationships with athletes and promote a winning culture through connection. This is Ron's bailiwick. What are those two things? Well, we're so glad you asked, because you'll just have to tune in to find out. Here it is, episode 638.
Power Athlete Nation, and all of the coaches listening right now, are you ready to take your athletes to the next level? Are you prepared to master your craft? Do you want to be standing on the podium next to your best athlete while you hoist the Lombardi Trophy overhead? Then you need to enroll in the Power Athlete Academy, where you can learn how to apply physics, all while fostering developing athletes in real time.
Head to academy.powerathletehq.com for industry-leading insight and practical application. Grab 15% off all Power Athlete Academy courses from now until Labor Day with the code BACKTOSCHOOL at checkout. That's all caps, BACKTOSCHOOL.
Now is the time to level up and empower your athletes. And you can do that at PowerAthleteHQ.com. Now is the time to level up and empower your athletes.
Power Athlete Nation, welcoming Ron McKeefry, twice named Collegiate Strength and Conditioning Coach of the Year, the author of CEO Strength Coach and Weight Room Wisdom, the host of the Iron Game Chalk Talk, and taking on a new venture this year as the head strength and conditioning coach for the Washington Huskies football program, but most importantly, Power Athlete Symposium speaker and three-time Power Athlete Radio guest.
Wow.
This makes four.
Great honor right there.
I haven't seen Texas Giddy ever. So just know he's real excited to have you on.
Well,
so.
Well, I was just in Washington visiting Cali and got the opportunity to shake hands with Ron on his way out, but then get a tour of the facility.
Was it the type of thing where you were like, hey, shooter?
We're still friends, right?
Still friends. Or like Red Lobster? Let's go to Red Lobster, shooter.
My treat, Ron.
Yeah, Ron's like, security. There's a kind of a short, hairy dude fucking stalking me around here, and it's weird.
No, it was cool.
Yeah, with cowboy boots walking around outside.
Huh? Yeah, you certainly in
shorts. Shorts and cowboy boots. I mean, it's standard. You know, isn't that what you rock in Seattle these days?
Short King summer.
Yeah, that's true. It's good.
But you know, we met with Coach Brian and got a tour of the facility. Amazing! It's awesome. I saw Bob Sapp's name on the wall. Mm. That was my go-to when we got the NFL highlight to the players that everyone that the Huskies have sent, which is very interesting. The one thing I saw that stood out. NFC West and the Raiders, a whole bunch of Huskies.
Oh, yeah.
It's like they can see them regionally. Let's just pick this guy up.
Well, I think everybody has a dream. I know my dream was to always play for the Raiders, and I was so disappointed at the end of my career. I kind of had this idea I would get a chance to go play for the Raiders and never got there. But having played there so much in Kansas City and putting my foot on their neck so much, I'm so surprised I never got a chance. I'm kind of a little upset about that.
You're too hard.
Dire hatred right there. You, Kansas City would turn their back on you.
No, I mean, playing in what do they call it? The black hole is at least what they called in Oakland was the worst. Like you'd see like 6-year-old kids over there, like giving you the finger, grandma giving you like double fingers, some dude like pulling his pants down. Like you're just like the worst people on the planet. And I always was like, man, I would love to play here. These people are awesome.
Well, Ron, one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on is we missed your whole Fresno State chapter. So you took on that opportunity, taking over the team and leaving the place better than you found it. But now we have this opportunity on the ground floor with you with Washington to take this over, man. So I want to go through your assessment of a team because there's seniors, there's juniors, they're in place that this was their team. And now we have a new quote unquote culture. And probably a new weight room coming in if history repeats itself. So what is your approach to assess what you have in place and then bring what you have to the table with this team?
Yeah, no, awesome question, man. I think, you know, for us, I mean, I think the last time I left off with most of Power Athlete Nation, I was leaving play to go to Fresno State. You know, the long story short, I loved my time at play, got to travel the world, got to work with different teams and do some phenomenal things, but you know, football raised me, you know, I think there's a lot of people listening that could appreciate that. And I missed the game. I mean, I've always kind of looked at myself as a football coach that my specialty is strength instead of a strength coach that does football. And I think that's an important distinction, you know, I think a lot of strength coaches, you tell them they can't squat, deadlift, power clean, whatever, and you can visibly see the steam coming out of their ears. Whereas, you know, if you look at it from a football perspective, right, there's always a way. There's, you know, and that was one of the fun things about being in the NFL is how many different ways can I trick this guy into squatting, you know, each day. And, you know, and so I got the dream, you know, one of my best friends is Kalen DeBoer, is the head football coach here. He got the job, you know, we played against each other. Well, he was 1 year ahead of me, but, we played against each other in college, coached together early in our coaching career, lived together for a period of time, you know, so you get really tight with those guys. Right. And, he got the job at Fresno State, got an opportunity to be, you know, to be that guy there. And, I got a chance to go back and coach with a bunch of buddies, you know, and really truly have the support of a head coach and have the kind of relationship that you dream of as a strength coach. Right. And it's great. I mean, we had a phenomenal run there. We went in during the COVID year and kind of had to deal with all of that. And last year was our first full year and we went 10-3 and turned it around from previous bad season. And then this happened, you know, there's a big opportunity here at Washington. And, you know, as everybody, you know, knows is, you know, the head coach got let go here for kind of some, you know, some tumultuous type stuff on, you know, and it just was a unique situation to walk into where, to be honest with you, there wasn't a lot of trust. There wasn't a lot of trust in the coaching staff. There wasn't a lot of trust in, you know, the organization. I think between, you know, like Tim Saha was a strength coach here. He's a great dude, awesome guy. You know, had a ton of success as well. And you know, I think it just, you know, COVID and just where the world is these days, it's a different landscape, you know? And so, I came in and met with every single player. I do that everywhere I go. It's not an easy thing to do to have a 20-minute conversation with 120 guys, you know, and really try to get deep with them in a short amount of time. So did that, met with every single guy and really just kind of, you know, sometimes change is a catalyst, you know, and I think to your question, I think the number one thing you assess is the culture. You know, if your culture is not great, you're fighting a losing battle each and every day. And so really trying to invest in these guys and show them that, you know, that I'm not a robot, you know, and be able to kind of, show the human side of me, but also hold them to a high standard, be a consistent guy each and every day. I think that was the most important thing. And then you go in and you really try to see where you're at in terms of your KPIs and, and those types of things. And you know, we've got some room just like everywhere to grow and get better. And we've been attacking that, but it's been good. We just literally finished our last day today of summer training. We just climbed the Space Needle. We did the stairs of the Space Needle and finished it off with
how many steps?
900 something steps. It doesn't sound like much, but it's pretty good elevation gain, you know, there. And you definitely felt it by the end of it. But you know, that culminated, you know, basically 8 months of a sun up to sun down and going after this thing. So it's been a fun journey. Hopefully it pays off this season.
Is climbing the Space Needle, is that something the dudes have done before?
So they've done it a couple times in the past. They hadn't done it for a while. And one thing I try to do is, you know, I program in 4 week cycles, and every fourth week is kind of a deload, unload. I mean, we never drop off in intensity, but we drop off in volume. And in those weeks, it's three, you know, pretty good intense workouts, but we kind of, the drop off essentially is the Friday lift where we do a special lift. And so, you know, we've had the Valentine's Day Massacre and the Red, White, and Boom, and just finished up with the stair climb. I've camped out on beaches and done sand workouts. I've done, you know, taken them and climbed mountains before and different things. I think whenever you create life experiences for guys, I mean, I can't tell you how many guys came up to me when we were at the top of the Space Needle, even guys that lived in Seattle and had never been to the top of it, you know, let alone climb the stairs, which not very many people get to do. So whenever you create life experiences for guys, they have, you know, it brings you together. Just naturally think about it. Like whoever took you to your first amusement park, you've got kind of a story for life with that guy, you know, or gal. And when you can do things like that, you can provide some life experiences for guys. It makes asking them to do three sets of eight a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Well, is it open to the public?
The stairs aren't. No.
No, I was going to say, because I've been up to have drinks up there numerous times, and I don't remember anybody ever seeing a stair option. So
I went to college in DC, and that was a big part of what our coach wanted to do. There's Iwo Jima. I mean, there's so much there, and we would take our conditioning on the road. So we'd be sprinting up all these places, and it had weight, it had significance, and I'm still talking about it and remember it today. So that's the thing that jumped out to me when you talked about running up the Needle. So, I mean, the Washington and Seattle is such a beautiful place. There's plenty of opportunity to make some memories with the guys out there.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. And that's what we've been doing. You know, we've done it creatively with, you know, we just took them paintballing not too long ago. We've done some different things. But I've always made it, you know, like, so in an 8 week block, right? In an 8 week block, we'll have two special workouts. One of those is always an ass kicker. One of those you're going to remember just because it's the hardest thing you ever did. One of them is going to be a kind of a team builder. And that's kind of what this was. So it was, you know, I think mixing those things in, you think about it like later on in life when, you know, when you look back on your lacrosse days and whatnot, it's like you remember those three or four really, really intense workouts. You know, you remember those times that you had a lot of fun with your buddies. You don't always remember the Tuesday freaking bench workout on phase, you know, two of your winter program.
Oh, it's cool, man. I'm sitting here trying to reflect, and I cannot think of a single strength coach or situation I had like that where that we actually did anything.
Mariucci spotting you? Had to get the weight or else?
Well, yeah, that was, but that was a max out. I mean, that was our testing day.
Yeah.
But Todd Rice never took us anywhere. I mean, like we never, you know, Eric Cohen was one of the strength coaches at Washington. And I remember he came to Cal, and he was good buddies with Steve Ettman. So Steve Ettman, who I remember seeing as a kid play at USC and was still probably one of the most dominant players I'd ever seen, was a Washington Husky. So mm-hmm. I remember, I mean,
he's like, a stud.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, you know, playing at Cal, like going up and playing Washington, especially in Seattle, or them coming down. I mean, it's been a formidable program for a long time. So kind of excited. What's the kind of the temperature around with SC and UCLA pulling out of the Pac-12 now and trying to get into other conferences? And I mean, I'm confused by it. I mean, I know why they're doing it, and I know that everybody wants to try to get into the big money SEC, NIL, TV situation. So now they're all trying to pull the ripcord. But I mean, I can't believe it, like that SC and then would pull out. I mean, that's foundational Pac-10.
Yeah, obviously the coach answer is that we're you know, we'll do whatever's thrown in front of us, we'll take care of, you know. But it definitely is something that, you know, especially as a new staff coming here, Pac-12, you know, the history of that, the Rose Bowl, thinking about going and playing some of those iconic stadiums and whatnot. I mean, it's a shame a little bit, you know, that money's having that kind of effect. But, you know, be it the landscape of college football and the reorganization of conferences or NIL or one-time transfer or all these things, I think what's been, for me personally, going back and forth between the NFL and college has helped, you know, because, you know, when you walk into an NFL weight room and everybody makes more money than you do, you know, you can't just scream and yell and pound your chest and get guys to do things, right? You know, and so you got to find a way. And that's, we're going to find ourselves that in that position here pretty quick here in college where, you know, probably everybody in the room is going to make more money than I do, you know? And so having that kind of training, I guess, is going to help. But yeah, the landscape of college football, I mean, I Washington's an incredible brand, you know. I mean, you know that between us, probably Oregon, I mean, we're going to end up being okay. Whatever happens, but it's a shame for, you know, what's traditionally a really strong conference to not know what the future holds.
Yeah, they're going to have to try to pull somebody in. I mean, but it's always been just kind of a West Coast deal. I mean, when I played, it was Pac-10, then they added two more and, you know, some other teams, but it's always been kind of this West Coast kind of dominated. SEC was obviously, you know, in the South and that. But man, yeah, I mean, I hope we don't look back at this in 10 years and realize that, you know, the NFL, like now it's going to end up like Major League Baseball where now you just have farm teams.
Yeah. You know, well, you know, being a player in the NFL, like when you'd go from Kansas City to freaking LA, like that, there was a lot of thought that went into your preparation, you know, be it sleep, be it nutrition, be it whatever. And you start to factor that into 18 to 22 year old kids that don't understand all of that, you know, I mean, you're already having some of those conversations in your head going, all right, how are we going to stress going to the, you know, if we end up going to the East Coast, like for freaking three times a year or whatever it might be, then like, man, you know, that's and then have to go to chemistry class on Monday morning, you know?
Well, one of my favorite moments was when I played in Philly, we went out and played, Seattle or, you know,
Seahawks?
Yeah, you went out to the Seahawks. I was going to say the Chargers, and I don't know why I was going to say that. We go out and play Seattle, and we would leave 2 days early. So we'd normally travel on a Saturday. We would travel on a Friday, which was actually phenomenal because we would hit the ground, and, dude, people like cars and limos and everything, and dudes would just go out, and we'd have a great time because we'd actually get to finally go out in the city. And I remember, like, the coaches, you know, would always say, hey, you got to get out there and get to sleep and get acclimated in this. And we're like, oh, yeah, sure. And now we're out there fucking burning it to the ground.
Easy, Seattle.
Oh, dude. We had a great time. I mean, there's always a ton of good restaurants in Seattle. And, you know, there's a lot of ways to get in trouble. So we would try to get in trouble. Yeah. I think the problem is, I mean, if you look, like, they're going to have to pull in. I mean, I think when I was doing a little research on it, like SC and UCLA were claiming that they were better than like 50% of the audience for viewing. And, you know, what they were viewing is revenue pieces and we're only getting a piece in this. And I'm like, fuck. Like, I just wonder if everybody, I mean, I realize the teams are probably in a situation where kids are like, well, we would come here if we were playing in a better conference. They probably heard that and they were like, well, shit, can we play in a better conference? Like, what's the conference we got to go to pull these kids? I mean, it's,
yeah, I think the recruiting, it's interesting because you got, you know, now, you know, it's just, you know, the deal, like when I was in Tennessee, you're playing number two this week and number five next week and number 10 the week after that. And like rankings don't end up meaning anything, but you think about it and you're like, man, that's a little bit tougher sled than playing wherever, you know, you kind of go on the peaks and the valleys throughout the year and you know, having the parity of where different teams rise up throughout, but I think recruits still looking for opportunities to have individual success. I think you're dealing with that a little bit to where you got it, you know, for guys like us that like the team is everything and the glue, you know, that's hard to sometimes to swallow.
Well, the other one, and I don't know how you convey it to these kids, regardless of whether or not you play on, you know, primetime every Saturday for the next 4 years, or you play on a team that might go like, you know, 7-4 or something and play in a bowl game, if you're good, the NFL will find you. I mean, 100%. I played with guys who were, you know, Division II, Division III, played in different places that could flat out play that didn't have the opportunity to play. But I think there's this idea that, hey, you know, I got to try to make this money now because I'm not going to have this opportunity. I'm like, dude, if you're a great player, they're going to find you and you're going to have an opportunity to go do it. The amount of guys that got drafted in the third and the fourth round from smaller schools that go on to have amazing careers is greater than the dudes that are, you know, first round shoo-in. This guy's going to be a future Hall of Famer, and 2 years later, you never hear his name. So I don't know where this kind of, I mean, I understand the sense of urgency, and, you know, my favorite is all of a sudden you see Saban bitching about it, which is hilarious because, you know, he's been paying his players for years and now everybody can play their players. And,
well, I just watched the movie Blue Chips, inspired by everything that's going on. I don't know if you remember this, but Nick Nolte.
Yeah. I remember the movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Based in essentially a fictional UCLA.
With Shaq, right? Wasn't Shaq the, the guy they brought in?
Oh yeah. And, Anthony Penny Hardaway. Yeah. And then one more dude I didn't recognize. I got to look him up, but, those dudes could play. Of course they were NBA guys just acting terribly.
Yeah.
And the joke that I kept remembering was from basketball, the running gag they have throughout the movie. They reference Shaq and they're like, come on. Everybody knows he made his money in college because he went to LSU for a year and then number one to Orlando.
You know, like the allure of being able to go to that school, you know, go to something, work your way. I mean, it just kind of, I mean, with a stroke of a pen, it kind of went out. And now you're in the situation where, you know, you're, I don't know. I think you guys got your work cut out for you. And
there's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. It's the Wild Wild West right now. I mean, it honestly is. And, you know, at least in the NFL, you got Players Association, you got a CBA, you've got, you know, a bunch of different things that kind of control it and keep it balanced to some degree. And right now you have this kind of gap of time where that doesn't exist. And it'll probably, who knows where it goes. But
well, the one I was laughing about is, so in the NFL, they obviously take their taxes out. So you pay taxes before you get your check.
It's very smart. Yeah,
the team holds back taxes. I don't think anybody's holding taxes back on these kids. These dudes are just writing them checks. All of a sudden, these kids are going to get what? 1099, because they're obviously not employees. They're going to get a 1099 for, you know, anywhere from 27% to 40% of what this money is. You know, state income tax, this. I mean, they're going to, all of a sudden, they're going to be looking and being like, holy shit, I can't afford this Lamborghini. And that's going to be a scary thing. I mean, because then, you know, now all of a sudden, these kids aren't going to be able to claim dependence for their parents. I mean, it's added a interesting situation. I mean, even more so, I'm wondering if there needs to be a CEO strength coach or like how to navigate this thing for these kids, because I mean, they're getting thrust into something that they were probably 2 to 4 years away from. And now all of a sudden they're 18 years old getting thrust into something that I didn't have to deal with until I was in my 20s.
Yeah, we're really fortunate here. I mean, we have the Foster School of Business, which is top five business schools in the country. And we actually run an NIL course that they all have to take. Mm. Through the Foster School of Business. And then we have, I think we're up to like 5 or 10 employees that are only kind of dealing with this kind of stuff in terms of helping our athletes navigate it. But
so smart.
It's, you know, it's either you got people around you and you're one of the haves and you can support that, or you don't, and you're going to run into some of these tax issues and things along those lines. And, you know, again, I mean, freaking me at 18 years old and, you know, my first credit card, I was an idiot. You know, everybody is. And so now all of a sudden you're going to have people run around with all kinds of cash. You know, hopefully we're doing right by our athletes, but it's everywhere.
My older brother gave me the best advice when I went to college. He said, when you go to the ATM, only take out $20 at a time. Whatever you take out, you're going to spend. So if you take $20 out, then every time you got to go to the ATM, you only take out 20, you spend 20. And he's like, if you do that, you'll be okay. And so to this day, like even when I go to an ATM, if I take out more than $20, I'm like, ooh, I'm taking 100. I'm like, yes. So it's kind of just a funny thing. Like, you know, I mean, and there was advice from my brothers who had been to college and, hey, this is how you're going to have to manage it. And now it's just kind of a different attitude. I mean, when I played in the NFL, I played with a bunch of dudes from Florida State and like Trey Thomas and Corey Simon and these dudes. And what had happened was when they were playing, I can say this now, present NFL guys from Florida State used to come back and like take care of them and write them checks. Hey, I know you're like living this. And so it was kind of like when you go to the NFL, you go back and take care of those dudes. Well,
recently, Odell Beckham got caught on camera.
Yeah, doing that same
handed
thing
out to LSU after their championship.
Yeah, so I mean, and so when I asked, you know, Corey Simon showed up and he was like, yeah, I drove a Range Rover in college. I'm like, dude, I had a $300 motorcycle. And he's like, well, this is how we got taken care of. And, you know, I mean, so like this thing has been happening for a long time in a lot of different ways. And now it's just kind of putting it above board. So, and I'm, you know, but, you know, like, still in my head, I still think about, you know, these universities as these like amazing pillars of education and getting an opportunity to go there and, you know, immerse yourself within the culture and get a degree and become a student and, you know, take all these experiences to move forward. And I feel like, I mean, these kids are so quick to pull the ripcord because they think that somebody doesn't like them. It seems weird to me.
Yeah, definitely from a developmental standpoint. I mean, you know, we talked about this a little bit off camera about having these crucible moments through their career and really, you know, not traveling the first time is, you know, and navigating that, not, you know, getting your butt kicked the first time in one-on-ones, you know, like these are times like, you know, you have to go through if you're going to be the player that you want to be. I think one of the things, I don't know if you saw Tex when you were here, but we have called the starving board, right? Mm-hmm. So you're either satisfied, hungry or starving. And we rank our guys from 1 to 120. As who's the most starving guy and who's the guy that's the least, you know, the most satisfied, you know? And I think in this time of one-time transfer and NIL and all that, you got a lot of people placating the people and only telling them what they want to hear. And there's no growth and comfort. You don't get better hearing how great you are all the damn time, you know? And you have to have these moments where you're gonna fall down and you're gonna get picked back up and you're gonna have to work a little bit harder in the weight room and you're gonna have to really dial in your nutrition and lose that extra 10 pounds or whatever it might be. And you know, and so what we try to do, and I think it's worked fairly well, is to be completely transparent. Like, this is where you're at. This is, you know, this is why you're where you're at. You know, you didn't do this and this, or you chose a shortcut here or whatever it might be. And put that up there for their peers to see, because, you know, sometimes it's easy to go back to your dorm room with your buddies and be like, yeah, coach is freaking trying to keep me down and, you know, and whatever. And then all of a sudden you lay it out for him. All right, like, this guy missed class and he didn't show up. He showed up 5 minutes late for workouts and he, you know, he didn't show up for the extra lift and, you know, all those types of things. And it's out there for everybody to see. When you have that, champions want to be pushed. They want to go. That's why Alabama is having success that they're having, is because they're surrounding themselves with guys that are going to freaking, they're going to work to get to the next level. Right. And they're going to, you know, they're going to, it's iron sharpens iron. And so, you know, they want to be pushed. And if you can create that environment, I think that's the only fighting chance that you got right now. But you're right. I mean, right now it's very easy to take the easy road, and there's no shortage of people out there saying, you know, hey, come here. And you know, and you got, I mean, as much as you got the blue blood programs of the world paying X number of dollars, you still got these, you know, random programs being able to cover your freaking car or cover, you know, I mean, whatever. And, you know, for somebody that's struggling, that's enough, you know, sometimes when you're, instead of, if you're not the starter, you're the third string guy.
When you, I mean, obviously coming to Washington, I mean, when did you get hired there?
December.
Yeah.
Right, so after our bowl game. Yeah.
So right after the bowl game. So you had an opportunity to really recruit through the whole off season and like, you know, as these 18-year-old kids coming in, how did the conversation change in this NIL landscape opposed from what it looked like 4 or 5 years ago when you were having these same conversations?
Yeah, I mean, obviously as a strength coach, I'm not in some of the higher conversations with the head coach and whatnot. I mean, my relationship allows me to get a little bit more insight. But I mean, there's definitely, I mean, like for us, you know, we're not necessarily one of the have-nots, you know, at Washington, you know, but we're also not, you know, some of the haves in terms of, you know, like, you know, some really affluent backers, you know, I mean, Seattle's a big tech company, you know, all those guys, not necessarily always went to football games, you know? And so like, It's interesting. I think you got a handful of guys that come in and it's just, what can you do for me? You know, and for us, for that, it's a pretty short conversation, you know? Then there's the guys that are like, okay, I want the culture. I want the development. I want all those types of things, but also like this school's offering me this, and it's hard to kind of, it's gotta be somewhere in the ballpark type of thing. Right. And then it's the guys that are like, they get it. You know, they come from good families or stable families or whatnot. And it's like, look, I just want to go where I have the best opportunity. And the challenge to your point is you got to get to the bottom of it pretty quick so that you can find the people that you want to get, that you can make sure they're on your campus, you know, and deciphering that sometimes gets pretty tough.
Well, for me, when I was going through the recruiting deal, I always wanted to talk to the strength coach just because I like lifting weights and like training. Not realizing that actually as a player, and I saw this in the NFL, your interaction with the strength coach is about 90-10 to position coach. I mean, obviously, you know, you're with the position coach during the season and you see him a little bit, but like the amount of time that you spend with the strength staff and the strength coach, like far outweighs that of the actual football staff. And, I was thinking about, you know, obviously I met Boyd Epley when I went to Nebraska. Doc Kreese was at Colorado. I can't remember who the strength coaches were. I mean, it was Eric Cohn at Cal, and I can't remember who the guys were at SC and UCLA. But it was, I'll have to think about those
UCLA
guys.
Might have been Yoxel or who would have been back there that time.
Yeah, I can't remember, but nice dude. Very, like, I mean, always, you know, when I always asked him, like, hey, like, because, I realized I was pretty physically wasn't as mature as some other guys. I remember I showed up as a rookie or as a freshman and my roommate had a full beard. I didn't even own a razor. I mean, I grew 2 inches in college. I showed up at 6'4" and left it almost six, you know, just a hair under 6'6". So like I knew that maturation phase was going to take and was going to really be an important piece for me. As you kind of get into this situation, is that still a conversation? Or is it just like, hey, you know what, like we've gotten past the honeymoon and now this is a straight business deal and kids are just trying to cut the best deal they can. I mean, for me personally, I would want to go play for the best school I could just to give myself the opportunity to play on the biggest stage. It was interesting to, you know, once I got to the NFL, having guys that came in that played at some like national championships and some serious games, I'd always ask them like, what was it like? Cause I didn't get to play at those at Cal. And they were always like, it was more exciting than, you know, like it was exciting because you knew that it was finite. It wasn't going to extend next year. It was, you had this one opportunity, this one chance with these individuals. And those guys all really cherished that. And I was always kind of bummed I never got that opportunity.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, to be honest with you, like you said, it's, you know, the good schools, like the good school can change overnight now. You know, I mean, you can have your entire roster leave tomorrow, you know, and pick up a whole new roster for the next year, you know, so that's the biggest challenge there. But I meet with every single guy, which means that I'm having lots of extra meetings with recruits. And we look at it as more of a value add, you know, and we really try to show the difference in how I can develop somebody. And it used to be just, you know, here's, you know, the before and after picture of this guy. And here's the, you know, the KPIs you need to hit, and here's all the different things, you know, that we can do. But now we actually kind of break it down into like, how much do you pay for training? How much is training with somebody at my caliber, you know, worth? And then you try to put a dollar amount to that. So now you're starting to kind of pointing to these different areas that you typically would have taken for granted and say every school has this, and try to separate yourself in that, okay, you know, training with a two-time strength coach of the year, there's probably a certain value that's associated with that, you know, and maybe different than maybe one of these other places that you're going. And that's actually worked a little bit, you know, in terms of really trying to lay it out there in that kind of, you know, numbers, black and white type of format. And then of course, I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, I think the beauty about the NFL is that at the start of the year, you know, you're in camp, right? You cut the roster down to, you know, to 53. It's like, okay, everybody, all the riffraff leaves the building. And it's like, these are the 53 and the five, you know, practice players and our staff and everybody in the building means something, right? And so we're all gonna, you know, we're all gonna play the season. That's our season. At the end of the year, we're gonna hug and then we're gonna shake hands and we're gonna be like, I hope I see you next year type of thing, you know? And you just come together for that 1 year. And I think that's kind of where it's getting into where you have to really, like, you have to come together for that 1 year. And then at the end of the year, you just kind of, you know, you just kind of like, where's the dominoes fall? And then we're gonna go right back to work and kind of have that kind of mindset. And I think the people that are doing that, you know, kind of having that free agent mentality, I think it's working for. I think the people that go against that with every fiber in their body, you know, and want to talk about the good old days and talk about, you know, whatever, they're really having a hard time with it.
Mm. No, that's great. No, it's a great mindset. I mean, unfortunately, and you hear this all too often, well, back in my day and how it used to be. And it's like, well, those days don't exist anymore. Yeah. You know, and you can either live in the past, you can get forward and look and realize that, you know, this is the way it is. And, you know, you either prepare yourself and get out there. So I think it's fascinating that, you know, a lot of these coaches, you know, mainly in the age of somewhere in their late 30s to 60s, you know, and you know, new and, it, you know, were ex-players and played in a different time. And now they're kind of in this evolution. And so I think if you have a growth mindset, you're able to, you know, come in, like you said, bring in the business school, give these kids a class, start understanding how to prepare them. More importantly, change the narrative within the coaches and kind of work within the tides, opposed from just putting your heels in and be like, well, this isn't how I did it. And well, you know, fucking Bear Bryant didn't give his kids water either. So, you know, we got rid of that shit too.
It's the first question I asked when NIL hit the first time, I was like, okay, where's the opportunity at here? You know? And so, you know, Fresno State, we had the Cavender twins, which were, you know, these two twin basketball players that were TikTok famous, you know, that were the two first athletes to sign the NIL thing, you know, and so they signed a T-Mobile deal and, you know, right at 12 o'clock in New York City and, you know, they ended up leaving.
Didn't they go to Florida State? Was it Florida State Miami? Miami,
I think, but, you know, but there was discussion of like, okay, T-Mobile is going to make this individual investment into you, but now what about your training? What about the facilities? What about these types of things, you know? And so is there opportunity there for these schools or for these, you know, programs to, you know, to make it a, you know, to benefit from this as well, somehow, shape or form, you know? And I love the fact that they're making money. You know, I think it's something that's, you know, I think it's just like with anything, right? It's extremes. Like the extreme was you can't go make freaking extra $10, you know, doing whatever, you know, signing autographs somewhere. And so now we've opened the floodgates and you can make $1 million signing autographs now, you know, and that's the part that's bad, but them making money when there's opportunity to make money, that's not a bad thing. And, you know, we just got to figure out how to navigate it. You know, and it's a challenge, but if we freaking try to fight it, we're just going to get steamrolled.
Yeah, sure.
Well, part of that challenge is for you is finding the right people to join your team and have your staff. So now I imagine the stakes are higher. So it's more important for you to key in on finding the right people. And you've done this a number of times with the different schools and professional opportunities you've had. So speak to us about your process for building a strength staff. What personality characteristics do you look for? What credentials are you aiming to find? Or is you leaning on the good guy principle or the layover test? Mm. Can I hang out with this person for 6 hours a day when we got nothing going on?
Yeah, I mean, I think the very fortunate thing is I've done this for so long now and I've had so many intern classes kind of come through. I think that's step one in this process is having this farm team of coaches come through and develop and then go off and continue to grow off of what you've, you know, kind of the foundation that you've laid. I think the last time I counted, I think there's 31 Division I head strength coaches that are former staff members, you know, and so you know, it's been, so to have that kind of input coming back into my program every year or being able to have those many, you know, that's just the head strength coaches, not to count the assistants, to be able to help promote and keep coaches developing so that I don't have to spend all that time. And then when they bring them back. So in this situation here, it was great because I was able to bring in people that I had worked with you know, other places that have worked for me and learned from my system and then turn around and built upon it, that have been head strength coaches other places, you know, that sat in my chair, which, like you talked about earlier, like, the, you know, writing the sets and reps and progressions and regressions, like, that's the easy part of my job. Give me a back of a napkin. I'll do that all day long. That's easy. You know, the management part of time, people, resources, that's the hard part, right? And so I was fortunate here. I brought all head strength coaches, you know, guys that have been other places. And so again, when we're laying out that value to those recruits and showing that these guys have all been in my job other places, there's value there as well. And I think where things are headed, you know, is, you know, ultimately everybody wants to be their own special snowflake, right? You know, and so everything's getting down to very individualized training, you know, and so it's eventually we have here, the way we broke it up is we have a head, you know, essentially a head strength coach for the inside the box offense and inside the box defense and outside the box offense and the outside the box defense. You know, and then within that, we bring in interns to kind of run. They're their small team. And so Now we're running four different programs, but we're having the entire defense in here at the same time, you know, and so that you're still building your camaraderie and your team chemistry, but you're being very individualized and specific. But your question is what I look for. Like, for me, there's a personality profile. Like, there's millions of them out there, DISC and Myers-Briggs and all those different things, but I use the Gary Smiley, you're a lion, otter, beaver, retriever, you know, and they're all leaders. They all have strengths and weaknesses. The lion likes to pound his chest and stand up front and, you know, has great presence, command and foresight and those types of things, but like very bad with details. That's why I misplaced on my calendar when the book and come to see me and put it on the wrong day and instead of the right day. So I'm bad with details. So I need to have a beaver on staff. That's somebody that's very meticulous, right? That's gonna have 20 different to-do lists and can think about all the process things that I'm not thinking about. But that's the person that, you know, is not going to be the person that stands up in front of the room and pounds their chest, right? Then you got to have your otter. Your otter is your playful one. That's the one that can relate to the players. That's going to dance when the music comes on. That's going to crack jokes and keep things light and, you know, and have fun, but that's not the person you want handling your discipline, you know, and your accountability with the team. And then you got to have your retriever, which is just your loyal soldier that doesn't mind not having limelight, you know, but is when you walk out of the room, nothing changes, you know? And so when I was a young strength coach, I thought because I was a lion and I thought I was a pretty good strength coach, I only hired lions. And so that's where you get the whole, you know, you throw a bunch of lions in a cage and they fight like cats, right? It's, you know, you don't want that. And that's exactly what happened. I hired guys like Kaz Kazadi, who's, you know, great strength coach, but, you know, went on to be a strength coach of the year as well. But he was a lion, you know, Frank Wintrick was a lion, you know, and those guys were great coaches, but we weren't the best team together. Now we had a great relationship. Don't get me wrong, but I was, you know, it was a challenge, right? Managing other lions. Whereas when you're a young strength coach, you have to work on all those things. Like, I can't be completely bad with details just because I'm a lion and I'm an assistant strength coach, right? So when you're an assistant, you work on all of them and you try to improve your weaknesses. When you're a head strength coach, you be what you are and then you hire your weaknesses. And so that's exactly what I did, is I hired my weaknesses here.
The wheelhouse.
No, I was going to say, I know Kaz real well. Kaz definitely fits within that line. I can't see Kaz being the, who is the playful one, the otter? No, Kaz isn't an otter, not at all.
he's got a little otter in him, but he's going to be, you know, he's going to be a guy that has conviction and is going to, you know, and is awesome. He was a stud for us at South Florida and then went on to be, you know, got that head strength coach job at Baylor and he's done great from there. But managing a lion when you're a lion is not an easy thing.
No, I'm a peacock, John. You got to let me fly.
Oh, I was going to say, I thought you were a turkey, big butted bird that makes a lot of mess that can't fly and just makes a lot of noise.
Just do enough to not get fired.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the, oh God. Yeah. No, corporate turkeys. We like to shoot them. That's all we do.
Yeah. What about credentials, man? I see there's conflict between different credentialing agencies. Like, how do you test through that? Is that just the access to get your resume on the door? Are you seeing more weight play towards it as, you know, more opportunities for education come into play? Like, does that still matter when you face the hiring process?
The only thing that really matters in the hiring process is whether or not you have an accredited certification, right? Because that's going to keep you from being able to be hired. So whether that's the CSCCA or the NSCA or NASM has an accredited, or no, I think it's the American College of Sports Medicine. I can't remember which one, but you have to have that to get hired. Now that doesn't mean there's athletic trainers 20 feet from you that have their CSCS that don't know how to coach anybody, right? You know. Now from there, I put certifications into three categories. I have the accredited credential to be able to do the job. Then you have philosophical certifications, right? So that's, you know, that's Power Athlete, that's Exos, that's Mike Boyle certification, that's, you know, whatever. And those are going to work in your favor if you go to a program that values that methodology, right? So if somebody has Power Athlete on their resume, I'm going to value that methodology, right? And then you have what I call advanced learning, which is all your FMS, your kettlebell, you know, Pavel or whatever, right? You're going to have these different kind of speed certifications, precision nutrition, whatever. And those are going to be the value add where now you're looking, you're feeling you're accomplishing some skills that I need on staff. Right. And so mm-hmm. if you have precision nutrition, I don't have a nutritionist, that's going to stand out in a resume. So I think too many young coaches, they try to just get all these advanced learning certifications and just throw a bunch of alphabets behind their name and they can't get hired because they don't have the one that, you know, the NCAA says you have to have, right? Yeah. And then the philosophical ones, people got to realize that, you know, there's going to be people out there that freaking every word that John says, they're going to freaking listen to. And then there's going to be ones out there that are going to be like, oh, that John guy, man, I can't stand that dude.
The worst.
You know, he's the worst.
The worst.
And, you know, and so sometimes that works against you too, right? You know, and so you got to read the room a little bit, but. You got to have a balance and you got to have people that are going to fill those voids. You know, I'm going to always have somebody that's speed oriented. I'm always going to have somebody that's power oriented. I'm always going to have somebody that can be my nutritionist liaison and kind of fill that void a little bit. I'm always going to have somebody that's kind of corrective exercise, you know, mm-hmm. on staff.
Yeah. A big component of our philosophical perspective is we aim and target specifically the social intelligence, like push all of our coaches to go for the NSCA, CSCS, because that gets you access, opportunity. Well, but then we help get you the job.
It allows you to get in the door and at least start the conversation.
Exactly.
I mean, I think so many times people, like you have to do not the basic minimum, but like you have to just allow yourself to get in the room. Like, you know, you have to have the right things on the resume to, you know, if you're applying for a job, I hope you have some experience in the job you're applying for. I mean, we've been, you know, recently going through a hiring deal and put some hiring stuff out and had some people apply that had zero experience in the job they were hiring for. And it's like, well, like, okay, so if I bring you in, like, how are we going to make sure? I mean, I can bring you in as an intern and, you know, give you 3 months to see if this fits for you. But if you're hiring for a specific position, like if I come into the strength coach and, you know, I have no experience as a strength coach, don't like to lift weights, but I was a philosophy major and I understand the philosophy of various strength coaches. I mean, you're going to be like, that's great. Right. I mean, if I'm looking to fill this philosophy piece, you're my guy. But unfortunately, I need somebody that can be on the floor and get what I need out of these guys.
Big difference between credentialed and qualified, right? Credentialed means you have the certifications and doesn't mean that you're a bad coach, but, you know, but what people fail to realize, especially young strength coaches, what they fail to realize is that buy-in is 95% of the deal, right? So mm-hmm. if I'm sitting at the Philadelphia Eagles and John Wilburn comes in and I'm like, okay, I'm going to put you with the GA from Alabama last year that won the national championship that worked with the offensive line, defensive line, or whatever. or I'm going to put you with this CSCS that worked with swimming last year from whatever national champion swimming program. Then like John's going to take like the swimmer and say, okay, thanks very much. It's nice meeting you. And then he's going to go to the
just pick him up, right? Put him down over here.
I'd be like, here, this is what we're going to do. Make sure you rack my weights.
and it's just that the buy-in's not there. Right. You know, so the biggest thing that I see more than anything is people that they're not willing to sacrifice to get the experience to build the resume for the job that they want. Mm. Right. Or they take the easy road. They go take the paid performance facility job working with, you know, Olympic athletes or whatever, you know, when they really want the job at the Buffalo Bills, you know. And it's like, it's not, you know, that resume is not the same. And we got to be able to not just sell the fact that you got your qualifications. We got to be able to sell you to the players and the coaches that are going to work with you. Mm-hmm.
You know, how does that work? I always thought on that, like, for me personally, I used to run into this in the NFL constantly, where you'd have, you know, different guys come in, position coaches that never played in the NFL and didn't really ever play football at a high level, but they were good coaches. Right. I can't imagine in the strength. I mean, I can think of all the strength coaches that I worked with all had some foundation in football. Like, you know, I mean, Kaz was our assistant at Kansas City, and Kaz played in the NFL and was a, you know, player, and, you know, all the guys that played, you know, Mike Wolf was, and Tom Canavy, you know, I mean, all these guys were legit. And I always wonder as a strength coach, if you, you know, cause I was thinking too, even as a young guy, you know, you come in and if the coach hasn't necessarily played the game, you know, and like, I wonder, like, let's say you hire, you know, like me, for example, and you bring in, you're like, oh, John played 10 years in the NFL, pretty strong dude, you know, done this. If you have a question about anything, he's run business, you know, like, he's your guy to go talk to. And then for young guys come in and you're like, holy shit, dude, this dude played for a decade in the NFL. I'm probably going to listen to him. So I wonder if that like cachet helps you as a strength coach to hire guys that have a little bit of experience on that side of the house.
Yeah, 100%. I rarely hire somebody that didn't play football. You know, when I'm in a football setting, only like right now I only have football. So I get a lot of heat for this actually when I go speak at conferences about resume building or, you know, hiring or whatever, because I always say this, that I think you can be a very good strength coach. I don't think you can be a great strength coach if you've never played the game or even played it at that level. Like, unless you've walked into a stadium where 70,000, 80,000 people hate your guts, like, you don't understand that stress that's on your body, you know, that you're having to deal with, right? So I think this I think there's two ways to overcome that. One is that you are a player at that level, in which case you probably didn't get the scientific background and the education that you probably needed to be elite in the strength world. And so you got to go put in the legwork, right? You got to go back, you got to get the degrees, you got to get the certifications, you got to read. You know, I'm not saying you have to serve certifications to be smart in this area, but you got to put in the 10,000 hours, right? Or if you are a guy that didn't play, like I played at a little NAIA school, right? I wasn't a great college football player. I was good for my level, but I wasn't, you know, I wasn't John Wilburn's level, right?
Well, you were Rafael Ruiz level.
I
was going to say you're Rafael Ruiz level, which I hold in the highest esteem. So
I thought they were FCS.
But you have to overcome it.
What's that?
Then you have to overcome it with, experience. Mm. You know, you have to build a resume. So, you know, now you go to Tampa Bay Buccaneers and then NFL Europe and then South Florida and on and on and on. Right. You know, I mean, and you have knowledge of, you know, through experience.
While we're on RAF, Sam Houston State football, I had an internship at University of Texas with Coach Benny Wiley, who was RAF's teammate in college. And talk about not reading your room well. I thought I would go up and through John and the connection to Ruiz, like go shake my hand and introduce and name drop RAF. Benny immediately says, it's a smart guy. And then gave me a lot of shit assignments for the next 8 weeks. So it's like,
here's the thing I love about Rafael, and I will always be in Rafael camp, but there's a lot of people that Raf rubs the wrong way because he is so good at what he does. And
it's so smart.
Oh, dude, it's ridiculous. I've always
a smart guy.
Yeah, it's, like he's not the. I mean, like if we go out and we used to go out and drink beers and get wings like one night a week, and Roth could, you know, tell jokes and be fun. But like that was the only setting. Other than that, it was like.
Serious.
Yeah, there's like another, like you were using line in this, there's like a monk piece of that, like the praying mantis almost that like Roth fits into. And but like I could see where a lot of people wouldn't like him because he commands a room. And I think like, you know, he's a sharp dude. And like, you know, I mean, still to this day, you know, if I got a question and, you know, always reach out and talk to Roth on certain things. And like, you know, I mean, I hold him in heavy weight. And he's, you know, I could see where maybe a dude like Benny Wiley, like that's not, you know, that's not who he is. And, but yeah, I mean, Roth's, I mean,
well, Benny's a lion. That's for sure.
Is he really a lion?
Well, man. Well, yeah, dude.
I saw that t-shirt he had on.
USC, dude. He's
yeah. Oh yeah. He's next top. Yeah.
Big Ben
is
10.
A good dude.
Yeah.
Ben is a great dude. I think Raph was great. You know, when Raph was at Tampa Bay when I was there and, you know, like, traditional high intensity program, like one set to failure high intensity program. And I had come from a weightlifting background. And so like, you know, Raph and I, we'd go through kind of the education and then I'd kind of get with Raph and Raph would kind of pick it apart from that side. And like, I ended up benefiting double because I put all these tools in my toolbox because I was getting the best of kind of both worlds there. And I think Raph, you know, that guy's, like there's nothing that guy won't do for you if you're in his camp.
Well, yeah. The funny story I always tell is, so I moved down to Tampa, kind of on accident. My older brother was living down there and he's like, hey, let's buy a house down here. So I went down to buy, like we went to go buy this deal. And it's like, we're closing on the house like 3 days before my brother Rob gets a job in New York and basically pulls a ripcord. And like the money had already gone hard. So I ended up buying this house and living in Tampa, call my agent. And I was like, hey, I need somebody to train with. He gives me Rob's number. I go out and I train with him, not knowing anything. And I couldn't tell if he was 19 or 56, you know, he's Filipino. Yeah, like, I just couldn't tell. I just assumed he was way older than me. And so I trained with him that whole year. And then I went back and had a great season, show back up off season. And I remember my birthday's end of March and his, like, our birthdays are like a day or two apart. And he's like, oh, what are you doing this week? I'm like, going out for my birthday. He's like, it's my birthday too. I was like, well, let's go out. And so when we got out, they brought the cake out and I want to say I was 25 and he was like 26. And like he had one more candle than me. And I'm like, you're 26 years old. He's like, yeah, I never told you. I was like, no, I would have never fucking hired you if I knew you were my age. I was like, thank God you didn't tell me. And he's like, well, yeah, well, like you couldn't tell. I'm like, no, like, you're Filipino. I didn't know if you were like 100 or 40 or 10, 20. Like you have an age. He still has an age.
No.
And
yeah,
it was just, right. No, I mean, he still looks the same. And he's like, was it a problem? I'm like, yeah, I would have never. I'm a fucking idiot. I'm like, you can't be much smarter than me. And we had a great relationship. But I just laugh that like sometimes like age, you know, people discount you just for being young. And I'm sure in like the strength game too, you know, you can bring in a guy who's, you know, amazing and he might be young and it might be just the fact that he hasn't had enough life experience. Or you're like, you bring this dude in, you're like, don't tell anybody you're 25. These kids ain't going to fucking believe a word you have to say.
Well, I think, you know, the biggest thing that I respect about you guys and just, you go back to the kind of that philosophical, you know, curriculum and whatnot. Certification is that, I mean, you guys are principle based, right? You took the best from every world, right? And you enhanced it and put it together in what makes sense from an athlete football perspective and then on down into, you know, each different discipline. But to me, that's the key, right? You know, that's why it's stood the test of time, because you constantly evolve and constantly grow and constantly challenge it, your ideals. And you go, and I think there's a lot of coaches out there to your, you know, what you're saying earlier, that really struggle with change, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's change in philosophy, change in what's going on in landscape, college football or whatever it might be. And, you know, that's the only change is the only constant.
Sure. I mean, yeah. There's a ton of stuff, and we talk about this. The idea of growth mindset versus a fixed mindset.
Exactly. So within the methodology, Ron, and this is a key factor that we lead off our chapter on principles with your quote to be a principle-based coach, and then go into just an understanding of philosophy versus principles. And we encourage people, have your own philosophy. But here's sure. our opportunity to empower thousands of coaches by teaching a principle-based approach. And so we released the course in 2017, and here we are in 2022 and have rethought refilmed and rewrote that chapter. So it's still a principle based, but essentially what we've done is broken apart coaching principles and then programming principles.
Yeah, smart.
Even down. So we are speaking to and coaching through the lens of athleticism, but then rely on science-based principles for the programming and then allow them the opportunity to really embrace what they are coaching for. Could be Olympic weightlifting, could be powerlifting, but we are speaking to athleticism. So it's similar sets and reps, but set up execution that really empowers the transfer.
Well, it takes place a little bit farther than that. Mm-hmm. If you look at like science, I mean, I know people are like science bitches, but you know, if you execute a study and you publish said study, for it to have validity, somebody who's not you has to be able to execute that study and get the same result. I mean, that's like the scientific method. Like, you know, I can't just magically go in my lab and come up with like, oh, I turned lead into gold.
Oh, cold fusion.
This is how you do it. Yeah, cold fusion. And, you know, and then nobody can replicate it. Like, that's not science. That's you just being a fucking charlatan. So right. I think with what we wanted, especially the, you know, the methodology and the idea of athleticism, I wanted to be able to provide people this blueprint and this training and then be able to give it to people. And we did. We were very fortunate when I retired from the NFL to get approached by CrossFit about going in and teaching the CrossFit football seminar, where we implemented this program for free and then traveled the world for over 9 years and met, you know, tens of thousands of people that did the program. And all the results were very, very similar. You could go and say, hey, you know what? This was measurable and repeatable. This person who was in, you know, the Arctic Circle got the same result as the person here in New Zealand. And all of a sudden you start finding certain truths within training and within programming and allow us to build upon that. Whereas I think all these other people come out and they're like, well, I have an idea. And yet they never really work within a large enough sample size. You know, what's incredible for what you've done, I mean, look at all the different places you've been, and the system works and allows people to mature into it and go on and create better things. I mean, that's the strength. I mean, that's the, you know, like the power of the program. And more importantly, what you're doing as a strength coach is helping this maturation process. I think, and you've seen this too, where coaches have incredible success at one place. And then they get hired with all these accolades and they're out in 2 years. And you're like, dude, that guy crushed it. How come he couldn't replicate? And that's something that's always puzzled me with professional sports and college sports, whether it be often, you know, head football coaches, philosophies. How come they can be so successful in one place, but yet can't replicate it in others? And that was something that I didn't want to have happen. I didn't want to have the program just be able for us to replicate it in the confines of, you know, within the walls of our training. It needed to be able to hand it to people. This is it. I need you to go out and use this independently and report back. And the results have always been the same.
Well, I think the other part of that equation is, I mean, the reason why it doesn't work always is because of the people, you know, and so the culture piece is, and as much as you guys put into the culture piece of Power Athlete, that, I mean, that's why it's as successful as it is more than anything, I think. And it's why guys have tremendous success at one place and go to another and fail is they don't always have the same people with them, or they start reading the newspaper clippings or whatever it might be. But I think is that because
they don't put the foundation first? I mean, that's the question I possess. Like, I mean, you know, we, as we were kind of game planning over this, like that idea, and Chris was like, you know, that culture becomes so important. Is that like, you know, you come in and you're like, I got to make sure I got the right staff. Like the weight room has to look the right way. We have to understand this. I mean, you start going through all these different pieces and you're like, you know what, like the sets and reps and all that other stuff aside, we have to work on getting everybody bought in on this is who we are in this culture, because this is how we create a winning organization.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I believe that to my core. I think it's what I've tried to do everywhere I've been. I think you'd start to naturally gravitate to the people that do something similar. So that's why, you know, that's why I'm with Coach DeBoer and you know, I'm believing him and he believes in me. I think that's, you know, hopefully it works here as well. But this guy, you know, Coach DeBoer is, I think, you know, I think he's like 115 and like 10, something like that in his head coaching record, you know, and he did it, you know, at smaller programs, building that foundation throughout. So, you know, and really that's the foundation. The foundation is treat people, you know, good, you know, the platinum rule, not treat people like they want to be treated, but treat people like, or don't treat people like you want to be treated, treat people like they want to be treated. And you know, that changes each and every place, but you kind of, you get it dialed in and then you're just consistent.
And, do you know what my number one thing for culture is? And I can tell you from having played on really winning teams and really shitty teams and all the other thing, the single thing I can tell you by the culture, and it's like, you wouldn't even believe it, but it's 100%. It's the quality of the food. When we were in Philly, we showed up and we were in Veterans Stadium and like, dude, it was like, we had to order all of our meals out because the food was so bad. And then all of a sudden, Andy, who likes to eat, Andy Reid, comes in and we go in the new facility. He goes and hires this world famous chef and is like, we're going to eat better than anybody in the NFL. And I'm not kidding you. Well, the first day we came in and ate in there, and I had the guy who was the chef. It's like, anything you want cooked, bring it in the morning. I'll cook it and leave it to you at the end of the day. I'd bring the guy like a turkey. I'd bring him a prime rib and I would leave with this and have this at home. And I'm not kidding you. When I left there, I didn't realize it as a youngster, but as an older man, I like cry now for the fact that like the food was so good. And then I went to Kansas City and the food was fucking awful again. And it was terrible. It was cold cuts. We did the exact same thing. And it was a weird thing where like that small thing of showing up and having like really high quality food, it's always available and you're treated really well on that result. Like, man, I would definitely take a pay cut. And there's a lot of shit I would take to have really high quality food and walk in and sit down at a meal. Cause I mean, I cook all my own food. So it's something like, maybe it's not as important to other people, but like how I prepare the food, I go out and I shop and I like to do that. Like it's something that I've always done. And so to see somebody else take that care and to walk in and have really good food. When I went to Nebraska on that trip, they had this amazing, training table and like ranchers that donated cows. And I remember we ate like every meal at their training table and it was phenomenal. They had Alaskan king crab flown in. And we went there and ate. It was fucking incredible. And I remember thinking like, holy shit, this is amazing. Go to Cal. I mean, obviously I went for the education and go for the food. But now as I kind of think back on it, having a really high-end training table and taking care of your players, like that goes so far, having, you know, gone into the NFL. And then when I went to the Patriots, I mean, the food was good again. But I mean, fuck, they're not going to feed Tom Brady crap, which was kind of cool because you knew they were going to take care of us because Tom would be pissed. So as I look back on it, I think like, man, like, good food and treating the players really well in that department, I think goes a long way. People be like, oh, how, you know, like, what, you know, one of the first questions, how it is around here? And players are like, dude, the food's amazing. People are like, really? Is it really good? You're like, yeah, it crushes it. I can't, I'm so excited to come every day. Like, that's a real thing.
The funny thing is that from a coach perspective, it probably wasn't even, it was probably more of an afterthought of the food, but it was, if we have good food, then they're going to sit around and they're going to eat more, you know, they're going to talk to each other. They're going to hang out. They're going to bond, you know, and it's really, it's Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? It's food, it's shelter, it's autonomy. It's providing those things. And how do you meet those needs? And if those needs are met, then it's gotta be really like, you're right. Then you're going to go somewhere and you're going to be like, no, this sucks. And you're going to know the difference right away.
Well, and Andy went to the Kansas City Chiefs, and I can tell you, and I've never been to their new facility, and I can't say this, but I guarantee the food is fucking amazing. I remember he got up in a meeting. He's like, this food is fucking awful. I don't even want to eat here. This is going to change. We're going to get this fixed. And we were like, yes. And the food was amazing. And then he went to Kansas City, and I bet you the food was amazing. But it's really indicative of organizations, like how they treat you when you travel, the food, the accommodations, how they take care of you. Like, I mean, I knew players that were, you know, so excited to go play in Seattle because, you know, private jets, how they were taken care of. Like that stuff goes a long way. I mean, obviously the money in that is all of the, you know, kind of an ego piece, but knowing that the team is investing. So like my only thing would be if you were like, you know, we're going to build culture, the food has to be good.
Well, my comment for you, Ron, how is the Bengals facilities? Because I've heard some things.
Trying to think about the food situation. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't the best good. I've ever been around either.
Bobby Williams, and Bobby played at the Bengals. And I remember when I talked to Bobby, I'm like, how was it? He's like, food's awful. It's so much better in Philly. That's the first thing he said to me.
Yeah.
I mean,
their locker room is separate from the fields. Like I was learning all this stuff about them when they were on their big playoff run to the Super Bowl and how just I was rooting for them. So hopefully these things could change for the players because it just didn't look professional.
The biggest issue with the goes back to what we were talking about. Biggest issue with the food there was it was an afterthought. It was kind of in this little closet that you would go in and you would get your food, and then there really wasn't anywhere to eat it. So most guys, they're in their locker, the bowl, freaking cereal, you know. And you know, I would always go get my egg scramble or whatever and go back to the strength office, you know? And so I do think you break bread with people, you get closer, right? You live together and it's a safe environment. Like, you get closer and, you know, still great, you know, that's why the great teams win, the teams that could come together for that one year and have that one run. Sometimes it's a song, sometimes it's a, you know, somebody dying, you know, like a person, you know, some sort of, you know, rallying cry that way or whatever it is. But, you know, it's gotta be something that's bigger than you, and it's gotta be that, like, those needs are met. And the coaches that look at it from a player's perspective and they try to say, okay, if I was a player, what would I want? Usually do pretty good.
Is it you know, like, Seattle's been obviously in the news for some of the social issues. I mean, the CHOP, that whole deal. I mean, you know, like, looking, I mean, one, I don't trust the conventional media at all. So, like, nothing's as good or bad as it ever looks. I mean, it's the optics on it. But, you know, where we sit, like, Seattle and, you know, obviously Cali, who we know, you know, works as a, you know, PD in that. So we kind of get a little inside. But, you know, is that something where kids show up, like, have questions about, hey, what's going on here from the news? Seattle looks like this, like the Wild West in terms of, you know, autonomous zones and this. I mean, is that something to manage?
Yeah, it's not. I wouldn't say that there's really like a fear about the city or anything along those lines. I think there definitely are tied into social issues. There's no doubt about it, you know. And I think, I mean, you don't get into, you know, to Washington without at least having a 3.5 GPA or higher, you know. And so we've got some really smart kids that are motivated by making change. And so that's the bigger things that we deal with, is like, you know, is the crusader, you know, everything being there, being an issue that they want to, you know, to be involved with. And if that's the worst thing that we got to deal with, that's a freaking awesome. That's an awesome deal. Right. You know, these guys want to change the world. I love it, you know, but you got to teach them that you can't take everybody's crusade either, you know? And,
yeah, pick and choose. And, yeah, be stingy with your crusades.
Well, yeah, just be, you know, just make sure that you know, that, what you do put time towards, you can make it, you know, that you can make change. But yeah, it's definitely, you got to be a little bit like, you know, I make sure that my words go through a filter before I let them out of my mouth sometimes. You know, I got to make sure that I'm, you know, look at, you know, just making sure that I'm not offending anybody in any type of way. And that could be something really subtle, or that could be something, you know, egregious, you know. And I'm just not that way anyways, but you'd be some, you know, but there's definitely, it's different than the Southeast.
Yeah.
Well, you forget I went to Berkeley, which is probably even more sensitive than where you're at. So
definitely, you know, what I like, what's cool about Seattle, what I really like about Seattle is you got this freaking Fortune 500, Amazon, Google, Amazon, Microsoft, you know, all these different, and then you got freaking blue collar fishing dock, you know, people that all freaking go to the same bars, you know, and it's a pretty cool environment that way, you know. And so that's what's neat to our athletes, I think, is being able to come in and kind of see best of both worlds. And hopefully we're putting together a workman's mentality, but it gets harder and harder each year. I think that's just
any prediction for the Huskies in the coming season?
Yeah, if we can catch fire, I think we got a really, really, I mean, we're set up in a pretty good way scheduling wise. But we gotta come together, you know. And like I said, it's been hard to manufacture those crucible moments, and real adversity, just because of, you know, like, a lot of our kids live 30 minutes away, you know, they don't all live around each other. You know, when they're here, they don't want to have a bad relationship with anybody. So that kind of peer accountability is something that, you know, we're going to have to go through some tough times and come together in the fire a little bit. And that's the beauty about football. It's going to find you one way or another, you know? And so I think we're in a position to be able to capitalize on that when it comes.
One last question for you. I mentioned earlier some evolution within our approach to teaching and viewing and communicating. In 2015, you dropped CEO Strength Coach, and you talked about three big skills. Technician for coaches, being a technician in your field. This is why, you know, that first level, get to a place where you can learn sets and reps, and then elevating to being an effective manager. And last but not least, and this is something the light bulb went off when reading way back when, being an entrepreneur within the strength and conditioning industry. So that wasn't even something that crossed my mind, but was introduced in 2015. So since then, we're talking years. Are there any other pieces and components that you would add if writing CEO Strength Coach 2.0?
Yeah, I think I definitely would have gone a little bit deeper in the entrepreneurial part in terms of like really helping people define what their platform is. I think whether or not it's social media platforms or YouTube or writing or podcasting or speaking or whatever it might be, you have to build an audience first. I think one of the funniest things that I go through a lesson every year with my interns, and they're all young and they're all new. And when I ask them what they want to do, they're all like, well, I want to mentor other coaches. And I'm like, you're just getting started. You're just getting started. And I think there's something to that in that, you know, there's always going to be, depending on if you're putting content out there, there's always going to be somebody that's walking a few steps behind you, you know? And so, yeah, you want to build that up, that audience, and you want to grow that. But I think too many people put, you know, now it's getting easier, right? Put a podcast out there, put a book out there, put these things out there, but they're doing it with no audience, you know? And so those books are falling flat. Those podcasts are falling flat. And those types of things. And so I think that's the biggest thing, is trying to figure out like, how do you build your following, and then how do you cultivate that? And you guys do such a phenomenal job of that. You'd be better at it than I would be to speak about it. But I think, you know, first is having that platform where you can build some eyes to look at what you're doing. It's putting out really good content, you know, and I think, you know, what I think most people, the biggest mistake or the biggest thing that I think a lot of coaches, when they read that book, they thought that what I was telling them is to get out of the business, and that, you know, in that entrepreneurial space, it's like you're building this side hustle so that way someday you can leave what you're doing. And that wasn't my intent at all. My intent was how do you provide stability in an unstable world, you know? And strength and conditioning is an unstable world. I mean, I can go from, you know, I've made $9,000 a year doing what I'm doing, and I've made a lot more than that doing what I'm doing, and I've done the same amount of hours and the same job and the same work ethic and all those things. And so my salary can fluctuate in a big, big way. And so for my family, I need to be able to provide stability in an unstable world. And so that's where some of those things that entrepreneurial spirit can come in, and figuring out how to leverage, you know, this platform that a lot of people have, can be huge. But that only works if you put out good content, which means you need to niche down into a topic that you can become an expert in, and then put out, you know, put it out on a platform that you can get eyeballs on it, you know. And I think too many people are just trying to, you know, they're just trying to go just vomit whatever, and there's no real thought process to that.
Yeah, I didn't take it that way. I think I took it the intended way, and then you use social media, still do, as essentially an education piece component, and view coaching as a career, like a long term. So what I do now affects the long term, 10 plus years from now, within my career as a coach. And I mean, over that time, even back then, 2015, if you look at the content, it's still connected to performance, movement, strength training, whether it's my videos or talking and speaking to how my athletes are moving and aiming to. It's not going to be exactly perfect back then, but you'll hopefully go on an evolution journey with me as a coach as I improve communicating and so on. So certainly that was the spark that I took away. Maybe I'm not sure what they were reading at that point, but yeah, man, it was career minded back then. Rather than just improving abilities to coach, no, this is a career.
Yeah. 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 I think, you know, I mean, I think there's a lot of people. I wrote a new book, but I haven't released it yet because it was going to be right during COVID. And I didn't want to come across like I was trying to make money off anybody in COVID. And then now it is all about kind of taking this and building this brand around the job that you have, you know, and creating these bubbles of income in different ways. And to me, that's what it is. You've got to figure out like what your passions are and create kind of these, you know, not side hustles, but kind of complementary skills that can make you a little extra money to provide that stability. And that's why, I mean, I go back to the name of the book, The CEO Strength Coach. I think if you can do what I have to do on a daily basis, which is go out there at 5:30 in the morning and motivate a bunch of 18 to 22 year old kids to go run through a wall each day and then come back and pick up the pieces. Like, you've got a skill set that a lot of people don't have. A lot of, you know, if you were doing anything else in this world, you would probably be the CEO of a company. And so developing those skills, but then also trying to find these little small pathways to create that stability. If you can do that, then you can do this for a long time and you can impact a lot of people. You know, if not, then you're going to probably be out of the profession in a short amount of time and you're going to be disgruntled about your experience.
Yeah. And angry and blaming somebody similar to the athlete that, oh, the coach hates me. You're a coach that, oh, the administration hates me or something.
Well, it feels like, coaching, whether it be football coaching or strength coaching, the wrong word is nepotism, but, you know, you tend to hire your friends or you tend to work with people that you like. And, you know, like, hey, like your buddy becomes head strength or head football coach. He brings in his guy and you're his guy. And then you bring that on and like, you know, ability to create relationships. How many people go in and it's like, I'm just going to here do my job and I don't care if people like me. And you're like, well, you're not going to get another job because nobody's going to want to work with you. And, you know, I remember my old neighbor, Joe Capuccio, used to say, you make money with friends. And, you know, you can make money with enemies, but it's going to be painful money. And I can't imagine, especially in the coaching deal, you want people that, you know, you've gone to war with that you can trust, that, you know, people that, you know, you understand their confidence that you've worked with that, you know, and I'm sure, you know, you've gotten resumes from guys and you take a look. Oh, he worked for this guy. It's the first guy you call. Is he a good guy? Because you trust that individual and he's not going to steer you wrong. And if he says, no, that guy sucked, that thing's going to get thrown in the trash. Hey, I never got a chance at that place. Well, it just so happened that the guy you worked for, you know, 10 years ago didn't like you. And, you know, he was best man at my wedding. I mean, that happens more and more. Like, it's just, I mean, it's hilarious to me looking in the NFL. Like, I got a call from my offensive line coach from the Eagles, Juan Castillo, who's the tight end coach for the Redskins, who ran into.
His name is Logan Paulson.
Logan Paulson. John Matz goes there. I mean, Ron Rivera. I mean, all these individuals that were on this staff. So, I mean, you know, they all go and they hire their buddies. And this guy was good for me. I mean, look at, you know, Sean McDermott, who was our quality control. And then, you know, Spags is his D coordinator. I mean, all these guys tend to work and it's just these little pockets and they bring in guys that they've worked with and do well. And I understand this guy's philosophy. So, I mean, I think a bigger part of the sets and reps and all this other stuff is, can you be, a good friend? Are you, you know, the type of guy who's dependable, you know, when the bombs start coming, are we hunkered down in this bunker together and we're going to survive this thing? So I think, especially for young guys, is like, you know, make sure you get in there and prove yourself. And more importantly, like, you know, go read Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People and fucking learn how to be a friend and make friends and, like, you know, have people like you and be a person who's dependable. And I think 100%. That experience, like that, if anything, because, I'm sure, you know, you were on a staff with a guy 10, 15 years ago and, hey, you know, that guy was, you know, we go out and get drinks or like I was thinking about, when I was at the Chiefs, one time, you know, we got off the plane. I'm like, Kaz, what are you doing? I took him out to dinner. We had drinks. Years later, I go to Baylor when Kaz is there and he's like, hey, I want to introduce you to this guy. When I was a, you know, young NFL assistant, this guy was a, big time starter and used to, you know, take me out and eat and, you know, was always happy to sit there and talk. And he introduced me to these guys. I mean, I didn't know Kaz to, you know, I didn't know he's an ex-player and didn't know any history about him until we sat down and I realized he was just cool in the weight room. And I saw him kind of milling around. I'm like, come on, let's go get something to eat.
Yeah, I mean, you go to Strength Coach Twitter right now, and there's no shortage of people that are disgruntled about the profession and think that it's just a good old boy network and those types of things. But you know, you're absolutely right. Like this job, there's so much on the outside world that can break you down from the inside out if you allow it. And so the trust piece is by far the most important thing, right? And that part of it has got to be earned. It's got to be earned through relationship building and all the things that you're talking about. And then beyond that, it's freaking making sure that you, like if I make a mistake here, it's on ESPN, you know? It's freaking the idiot strength coach at freaking Washington did this, right? And you know, and that's something that's hard. That, you know, again, you go back to the qualified versus credentialed. Like the credentialed person doesn't understand that, you know, and it doesn't matter what degree you got, it doesn't matter what certification you got. What matters is when your star receiver will come on and cuss you out in the middle of things. Are you going to freaking punch the kid or not? You know, and or can you handle that situation? And has nothing to do with X's and O's of strength and conditioning. And I think you're right. I mean, you gotta build that kind of trust with that level of people. And then you gotta see those types of situations happen so that you know how to handle them, right or wrong. I've seen plenty of coaches handle it the wrong way. I've seen plenty of coaches handle it the right way, you know, and you take mental notes and say, okay, that's definitely not how I want to handle that in the future, you know, when that presented that case. And you know, then you deal with all the things like, I mean, coaching through 9/11 and coaching through the Afghan war and coaching through, you know, COVID and all these life, you know, God altering things, you know, like I've been able to handle a lot of different stuff, you know, that you just haven't been able, you didn't get taught in freaking exercise physiology class, you know, that you got to build that. And so it is something that takes time. It takes the sacrifice piece is the thing that people don't realize. You got to sacrifice. And sometimes that sacrifice is in the form of an unpaid internship, or it might be low paying jobs for X number of years. But, you know, to be able to have this type of level of impact on a daily basis is a privilege. It's something that you know, that not everybody gets the right to do, you know, gets to do. And we've got to, you know, that has to be earned. And then it has to be, you know, you have to be supported from within. And I think what you said is absolutely on point. Probably spend a whole podcast just on that.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I think people sometimes struggle a little bit with the idea of like, you know, wanting to get your agenda across, whatever, but also just, you know, like, being a guy who, or, you know, person rather, that's a likable person, somebody you want to go out and get a drink with or invite over for dinner. I mean, and, you know, I mean, I was very fortunate. I grew up with older brothers and, you know how to play the fucking prickle card too. But I mean, you know, there's also, you know, understanding in terms of playing in the NFL, like how to, you know, play within a group and especially on the offensive line, like how to work with people and realize that you're not going to work with everybody. Or, I mean, at least in the NFL, like I didn't like everybody I worked with, but as long as you have a cohesive understanding of like, this is our mission, this is what we're trying to accomplish, hopefully you get it done. But, you know, I know within these coaching staffs, it's so funny to see how like, you know, guys end up kind of just attracting other individuals because, you know what, hey, I know I can work with this guy and we're going to work a lot of long hours and he's somebody I can trust, somebody who's, you know, proved himself. And I think that that's severely underrated. And like you said, sometimes it's the internship or, you know, going here and doing this and working with this guy that allows you to set the groundwork that, you know, now all of a sudden, a few years later, you're very successful because of it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Cool.
All right. Well, Ron, thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks for taking the time and tuning in to another episode. Oh, but we need to ask Ron if people want, I mean, obviously people can get a hold of you. I mean, they can, you know, follow you at UW, but for your own social, you know, connections, what's the best way that people can get a hold of you?
Yeah. Easiest way is probably just to at Ron McKeefrey. Or I think it's at R McKeefrey actually on all those social media channels. You know, I've done a better job. I've not done a great of job being here, checking that stuff than I have in the past, but.
Well, when you were a play, you were on it. I'll tell you.
I was on it in play. Yeah.
Dude, no. When you were a play, like, yeah, I mean, like the amount of content and social that I would see. And then since you got back into this coaching, it's gotten real silent because you don't have time. I mean, you know, you're over here, you know, managing, you know, the family, wife. I mean, you got all this other stuff in this. I mean, I feel like, you know, sometimes when people go like, hey, I haven't heard as much of you because I'm really, really fucking busy. I got like, you know, I maybe wasn't as busy or my job was more forward facing. So I had to do this. But shit, man, you're going to see what we're going to do on Saturday. So even though I'm a Cal Bear, I'm still going to root for you guys. And I'm excited to see how the Huskies do.
Yeah, it's well, I'm rooting for the Pac-12 right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man, I'm a little bit nervous.
Pac-10, it's back.
It is, but I fucking hate USC. And fucking drives me crazy. And I can't stand the UCLA powder blue uniforms. So going and playing those two teams was the best. Coming down and trying to stomp the Golden Bears coming in and stomping the Trojans and the Bruins was always great. So to actually see those games not happen, little piece of me is going to die. I mean, those are some of my favorite college games.
Well, Ron, you still got Iron Game Chalk Talk, correct?
No, actually, we passed that off to Isaiah Castillaja. Okay. Isaiah's doing it now. It's Iron Game Chalk Talk 2.0. So I'd encourage everybody to listen to that. He's done a great job of kind of picking that up and going. And it was really just, I was ready for something different. He's the right guy to kind of keep it going.
Awesome.
Well, check it out. Starting brands. It's what you do, man. So thank you very much, Ron.
Appreciate
Always
you guys.
A pleasure, dude. And we'll be pulling for you on Saturdays.
Thanks, fellas. Thank you. Thanks so much.
Cool. Thanks. See you.
Now it's time for you to empower your performance. You can follow Coach Ron McKeefrey on Instagram at rmckeefrey. That's McKeefery. Until next time, bye!
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.